Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Well, welcome everybody to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Ann Baldwin. And you know, I've said this to a couple people, and I got to quit saying it because I'm going to say it again today, in that I am so excited to have an old friend come into the studio and be on the show with me. And you won't believe it. It's the one and only Jerry Brooks.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Why? What do you want me to say?
I thought it would be somebody really exciting or interesting.
You're exciting and interesting, man. You are a legacy of television back in the day, of radio. You know, you and I had the pleasure of working together at NBC Connecticut, they call it now. It was WVIT.
And it's gone through a bunch of different names, hasn't it?
Hasn't it? It's gone through a lot, that's for sure. The business sure has changed. So how have you been? Tell our listeners, Jerry Brooks, what's going on? What have you been up to?
Let's see.
How long has it been since you retired?
Little over 6 years.
Okay.
November 2018. And it's been great. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I love the 44 years I put in, and I don't miss it at all.
Isn't that the number one question that you always get?
And people are surprised.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think they see, you know, radio and TV one way, and but they don't live it. And after 44 years of living it, that was quite enough.
Yeah. Did you find yourself, though, like waking up after a few days, a few weeks in retirement going, what do I do now?
No.
No, you're keeping busy.
I keep busy, but, you know, if I had to list everything I do, it'd be a very short list. But somehow we fill up our days. Mm-hmm. I see more of my wife. My wife sees more of me. That's usually a good thing.
Is it?
Usually.
All right.
I putter around the house. I play golf or go hit balls. I read a lot. And just somehow, you know, 4 o'clock comes around.
Cocktail time.
And it's cocktail hour, and we catch up with each other and actually talk and, you know, how was your day, blah, 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 have a nice dinner. And it makes for a very happy life.
Right.
I've been very pleased. I mean, my only goal really was to stay vertical. I'm 72. And my father didn't reach 70. Hmm. He just fell short. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather's didn't reach 70. So to reach 70 in my family was a cause for celebration.
Absolutely.
My brothers are approaching, so I think they're going to make it just fine. And, you know, I think generally, you know, we just take better care of ourselves these days than our parents or grandparents did. You know, we're a little more conscious of keeping up with our health appointments and
absolutely
doing what we have to do.
Right. And Kathy was a stewardess, right? So does she still have those? You guys travel quite a bit. You have the benefits of that?
We do. My wife flew for American Airlines for almost 40 years.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Everything changed after September 11th, mm-hmm. of course. We had some incredible journeys pre-September 11th that will never happen again, like flying in a cockpit from London to Rome.
In a cockpit?
We flew to London en route to Rome, and this was before American flew to Rome, so we caught British Airways from London to Rome, and, you know, there's an exchange and all that. The flight was full. Somebody came out, looked at Kathy and me, and she said, "Are you crew?" And Kathy goes, "I am, he's not." And, you know, she eyeballed me and just said, "Follow me." And she goes, "Take a left." And I said, "No, no, no, that's the cockpit." And she goes, "I'm well aware."
Oh, wow. Unbelievable.
So, you know, that doesn't happen anymore, but it was one of actually a life highlight.
Of course.
To fly in a cockpit to Rome. And at one point, you know, the pilot said, "All right, look up straight ahead." And there are the peaks of the Alps coming up out of the clouds. And that was, that was living for sure.
Absolutely.
But we still travel.
Oh, that's good.
To answer your questions. She still has the benefits. They are so much harder to use because the airlines are all so different now.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really use the benefits that often. Just because we don't feel like putting up with the angst.
Right. And it's, you're on standby. You don't know if you're going to get on or not. But good. At least she has the benefits. So, you and I worked together. And boy, was it a different business back in the day, right?
Really?
Wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just heard from someone who works at one of the affiliates that a lot of stations now are going one-man bands.
Yeah.
Right? Like when I started in the business in Cheyenne, Wyoming, back in 1982, I was the news director, I was the anchor, I was the videographer, I was the editor, right? But it's kind of going back to that. These poor reporters are having to do all of this themselves because the news cycle has just gotten so aggressive. I mean, what do you think when you, Jerry Brooks, look at local news today?
Well, I still admire a good reporter
mm-hmm.
in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I still admire great photography and editing. And I still admire an anchor who can sit there and write what she or he says and deliver it with some authority. So, there's a lot of things I still like. And, I can tell where, every now and then, you've cut costs. And because I started in this market in 1974. I worked in radio in New Haven briefly at WAVZ. The New Waves, the Lucky 13, New Waves, Eyewitness News. And then I actually went to WPOP when it was all news, and I did sports. Then I was at Channel 30 on the weekends doing weekend sports. And then I spent 79 to 93 at Channel 3 and just went back to Channel 30 and ran out the string for another 25 years.
And wrapped it up. What's your favorite newscast right now? Can I put you on the spot with that? What news do you watch? You still watch NBC?
I'm pretty faithful because, I know the players, most of them. But I'm a big fan of Keisha's mm-hmm. and Ryan Hanrahan. Mike Heideck does a good job. I appreciate the work they put in. I think, Hanrahan is a singular talent. Really do.
Yeah.
And that's not to short shrift any of the other meteorologists because, Mark Dixon, Joe Fury, Rachel Frank, they're all really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's the thing. In this, kill the mainstream media days, local news people work their asses off.
They do.
If I can say that.
You can say that.
They really, really do.
Yeah.
And, if I even detected bias, I would get on the phone and say, what were you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
This is not your place to comment on whether or not you like Joe Biden, Donald Trump, or whoever anybody's, in
right,
the news.
Right.
You just tell me what's going on. But these days, I always blamed cable news and then social media for, a lot of the splintering that's going on. And it's just disturbing that a lot of that anti-media sentiment spills over to local because really, these are, your next door neighbors who are really trying very hard to do a good job and these days keep their jobs because everything's shrinking a bit.
It
the
is.
Amount of news time isn't shrinking, but, the dollars spent on the news, it's tough these days because the audience is shrinking and going to streaming.
Right. Do you think that there will be a day when the brick and mortar television news station is gone? Kind of like the death of our local newspapers.
Don't see how it can continue indefinitely or infinitely, definitely not. Because with streaming, why would anybody need local affiliates to get their product to you?
Mm-hmm.
CBS needs a WFSB. ABC needs TNH and Fox and 61. And out of all the stations, Channel 30 is the only one actually owned by its network.
Which is a benefit.
It is a huge benefit right now.
Right now.
But if look at what NBC is doing with its cable stations.
Mm-hmm.
They're spinning all of them off into a separate company, except for Bravo, because Bravo produces content,
mm-hmm.
i.e. a lot of the reality stuff. And, you know, and I don't mean to sound terribly highbrow, but the only reality show I ever got into for a while.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
Below Decks.
Below Decks?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, that's, you know, the yacht and the crew,
okay.
the nubile crew members. And, you know, it was fun for a while, and they have the very stern Captain Lee or Captain Sandy on another ship.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
You know, that wore off after a while because, you know, they change crews, but they're really all the same.
Right. You know what concerns me, Jerry? And again, if you're just tuning in, Ann Baldwin and Jerry Brooks, just having a great, friendly conversation. You know, in a lot of this stuff, I remember back in the day, if I made a mistake or there was something wrong with the news piece that I came back to the station with, I mean, between you and Joanne Neste, true journalists, I mean, you know, she was just on top of making sure everything was grammatically correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good for her. That's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Today, they're using slang, and they call each other. It bugs the heck out of me when someone will shorten somebody's name. Like, over to you, Keish.
Yeah.
Over to you, Rach. You know, over to you, Jer. But anyway, you know, if something wasn't right, there were other eyeballs on it to make sure that the product that went out to the people watching the newscast really was relevant, was non-biased, and was accurate. And I don't know that we have those checks and balances today.
Not like it used to be,
yeah.
For sure. I
yeah.
mean, every newscast has a producer. But that producer, who may or may not be 22, 23 years old, fresh out of UConn or
mm-hmm.
Quinnipiac or
yep.
or Central, wherever, you know, doesn't bring a wealth of life experience. And that's not their fault because they are 22, 23.
It's a money thing.
You know.
You get what you pay for.
They work
yeah.
for less. And, you know, hopefully they will stay in the business and grow with the business and accumulate some life experience. But by then, they're ready to make some real
money.
But
they shouldn't be doing it here. I mean, back in the day, we had to start in a small, small market. We were starving. We could, you know, mom and dad still had to subsidize my income because I couldn't afford my rent. And, you know, then you go from the Sterling, Colorados to the Cheyenne, Wyomings to the Springfield, Massachusetts, and then you work your way up. But why is that not happening today? Is it money?
It's money.
It's money.
And you know, hopefully the people who do the hiring see
potential.
A reason to hire these people,
hmm.
and hopefully that is some talent and journalistic integrity. You know, I look at some of the TV websites now, and, you know, you see a bunch of anchors doing dance videos.
Yeah, well, that's because
and,
they're told they have to.
You know.
They're told they have to. They have to be on social media. They have to, you know, fill all that up. So let me ask you this. What was one of, you know, in all your years of television news, what was one of your favorite moments or one of your favorite stories that you ever covered? And then I want to tell you mine.
Boy, I used to do a feature called The Brooks File
yes.
at Channel 3.
Yes, yes.
And there were some... There were some fun days in there. And, you know, part of that was being aware of what was going on and trends and things like that. And, you know, having just, you know, castigated, you know, dancing anchors on video. You know, when MTV first started and people, it was just a buzz about it. You know, we did a piece on that and I did my own MTV video. And but a lot of it was the interpersonal relationships as well. With either, you know, anchors, fellow reporters, producers, assignment editors, but especially photographers and editors. And
because they can make you or break you.
Yeah.
You know, they're I don't think a lot of people out there understand that, that they're the pictures that go with the story, right? And sometimes they're treated like, you know, low class citizen when really they're the key component in a successful story.
They absolutely are. And I, you know, when I was in the field and, you know, working at Channel 3 at the time, you know, my go-to guy, Rick Huntington, still lives in West Hartford. You know, we're great friends, still good friends, and but I always looked at him as being my absolute equal.
Yes.
And on any given day, he could be my superior. You know, everybody has a bad day. But I never, ever did an interview with anybody without ending it by turning around and saying to Rick, do you have any questions?
Yes, absolutely.
And he would either ask an obvious question that I just plain forgot, or he would ask a brilliant question that I never would have thought of.
Right, right. And that's where the teamwork comes in, right?
But he was listening.
Yes.
He was paying attention to what we were talking about, and perhaps he was paying attention more than I was any given day.
So I'll never forget the, you know, you probably got some horror stories about me, but the only... I think my favorite story was when I got to cover Bob Hope's 80th birthday out in Los Angeles, and they sent me with my husband at the time, who was the photographer, right? So I'm like, Bob Hope's birthday, man, we're going to get dressed up. And
meant they didn't have to, you know, get two rooms.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, they saved a buck, but they we could still only have Taco Bell for on our expense sheet. That's another story.
Yeah.
So anyway, we went out there together. We're all dressed up, and, you know, people just, because the, in Los Angeles, you know, people are very casual. Even the news media is pretty casual. So they thought we were network. So anyway, they take us right into the green room, and there is all these celebrities. I mean, Bob Hope was right there. You know, I got a picture with him. I always said, can I hold you like I know you? And so that was one of my favorite experiences, just to get to cover Bob Hope's birthday. And then the other thing I'll never forget, I was anchoring the news on a weekend when Lorena Bobbitt's story came out.
Oh, God.
Okay. And you know how this is, right? You've got people behind the cameras, people behind the scenes, and I got to get through the fact that she chopped off her husband's, you know what, right? So I start laughing, but I'm not smiling, just my voice is shaking, and I get through the story, and I had another story after that. I had to throw it to break because I couldn't keep it together. Everybody was dying on the other end of the on the other side of the camera. It was hilarious.
The hardest thing to do when you're anchoring is to stifle laughter.
I know.
It's painful.
It is.
It's actually painful.
Yeah.
Because there's no place for it, but you're a human being.
Right.
And if somebody says something that sets you off, you can feel it start in your stomach and work its way up. And you can feel your cheekbones rising.
Yes.
And you just want to cry because you're working so hard to keep from laughing. Gail King and I doing the 5:30 news at Channel 3, I mean, she just, I was doing an obit for Johnny Ray, who was a 50s singer. And I remember in the story, you know, I referenced his singing style, which was a cry in his voice. And and I said, two of his hits were Cry and The Little White Cloud That Cried, which Gail found hilarious.
Funny.
And I could see her turn away from me so I wouldn't see her laughing, but I could see her shoulders heaving up and down from the back.
Yep.
And I got through the story and I just went, Gail. And she starts laughing all through her next story and had to toss it to break. And we did get called up to the principal's office.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I remember the time that I did a lot of human interest stories, and I got to know this little girl that had cancer. And anyway, we did a lot of stories with this family and on this cause. And then one night I had to read on the news the fact that she lost her battle with cancer. And I started crying on the news. That was the first time and probably the last time I ever cried on the news. Don't you know, right after the news, phone rings in the newsroom, it's Schwade. Don't you ever do that again. I wasn't. He told me I couldn't cry on television, right?
Yeah.
I know. We won't get into Schwade horror stories. Well, I know actually, he's a good friend of yours.
He was on the air yesterday here.
Really?
Because he lives in Burbank, California.
Right.
And Danielle Poulin, who was on the desk then, is still there. And she called him up and asked him to do a live shot. Yeah, we got along. I got along with Schwade, I think, a little better than you did.
A little better than I did, yes. But, yeah. So what was your impression of me in the newsroom? What kind of a reputation did I really have? I really want to know. Be honest.
Beyond solid journalistic skills, volatile, perhaps.
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 And, you know, there was nothing like a good Baldwin temper tantrum. And I had that at Channel 3 with Jim Vicevich every now and then. Mm. And, you know, it was kind of like being a spectator at a great show. Because if you were going off or Vice or somebody else, you know, you just kind of lean back in your seat and go, well, let's take in this one.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me it was fun because unless it was directed at me, which fortunately I don't think your ire was ever actually.
No, I think there was one time when I had written an intro to a package of mine, and you and Joanne would sometimes take the liberty of rewriting my intro, and then I said I didn't think the intro went well with the story, and I think we got into it a little bit, but
yeah,
that's it.
And after that, if I wanted to change something, I would always go to the reporter first and say, I would like to reword it this way. Is that okay with you?
Right.
Because I had a similar instance when I was coming up at Channel 3. And, you know, the lead I would write for the anchor, I would take time and craft it. And, you know, one night the anchor just totally changed it. And I was like, what'd you change that for? I wrote it to lead right into the package. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I got the verbal equivalent of a middle finger, and life went on.
Right, right. And those were back in the days where you could express yourself, you could say things, you could do things. You know,
see, I loved the newsroom environment.
Oh, my God. And that's why I am the way I am. You know, people, my dad always said to me, you know, Anne, you should have been a truck driver. But I said, you know, I grew up in a newsroom. It's hard for me to shed, you know, some of my personality and some of the, you know, you had to kind of have your claws out.
No, it's true. Well, you know, it was just, I always equated it to a locker room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Except people had their clothes on most of the time.
Most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Could we tell stories about the couch in the bathroom? Anyway.
But, you know, I loved the newsroom atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because
there was
no real political correctness for a long time.
No, there was. And just, it was just a good time, good people, like you said, working their butt off. You know, people think, oh, it's such a glamorous, you know, occupation. Yeah, you know, at times, but not, for the most part, it's not. You know, you're covering big things. You don't get special treatment. You know, I remember covering the last call at Cheers in Boston.
I remember that.
Remember that?
Because I was there. No. That was just before I went on the air there.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Okay. So, you know, I mean,
I watched it.
You watched it. So we're out there in Boston. All the media's there. I mean, literally, there was nowhere to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, you just stood there for hours and hours and hours and hours. But you know, that those were the good old days. They really were.
Yeah.
So you're doing some charity work now?
I'm doing some. Well, I'm a spokesperson, I guess, for a group called Twilight Wish.
Mm-hmm. I saw you on television.
Yeah,
doing some
I pop up every now and then, and that, you know.
What is that charity
sweater.
About?
Well, as it was presented to me, and what it is, it's Make a Wish for seniors.
I love it.
I do too, and I really haven't done anything of the sort since I retired. So I got a call from Bob Dunn, who at one time was the general manager of WTIC, News Talk 1080, and Rose McHugh, who has been in local broadcast sales for years.
I know her.
And I knew from the station, Channel 30. And they said, we want to pitch you on something. And I went, I'm not going to do commercials. Well, we just want to talk to you. Yeah, but I'm not going to do a commercial. I just want that out front.
Uh-huh.
And then she goes, but she never said what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I find, Rose, I'm not going to do a commercial. You know, for
yeah, and you did a commercial.
But it's a public service announcement.
Okay. Oh,
so I
okay.
meet them for lunch.
Yes.
And I thought it was for a product. You know, like Hilton Catterly did commercials for gutter helmet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I, you know, we met and they go, you know, Make-A-Wish for kids. And I go, yeah. Well, this is Twilight Wish for senior citizens. And I go, oh, all right, sure.
And you do it.
And they go, is that it? And I go, yeah, you know, if you had just told me this over the phone,
yeah, but they,
you wouldn't have to buy me lunch, and now you're going to buy me a drink.
There you go. So, well, that's great that you're doing that, Jerry.
It's a great organization.
It is.
It really is.
It is.
And, you know, Google it. If you haven't heard of it, Google it, look it up, and I think you'll like, you know, everybody should like that.
Absolutely. I want to know more about it. Well, Jerry Brooks, we're out of time. Yeah, this just flew by. Can
wow,
you believe it?
That was quick.
That was quick. And it was such an honor to, and I'm glad that you and I are going to go to lunch after the show.
I'm so very excited about
we can catch
I'm
up.
I'm not a cheap date.
No, I know. Oh, that means I'm buying, I guess?
Oh, yeah. You told me you were.
You always were known as a cheapskate. Anyway, Jerry Brooks, thank you for being in the house today. Ann Baldwin here, and thanks to all of you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.